Right now, an outbreak of the deadly virus Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has infected at least 130 people. The World Health Organization has declared a very high risk of the virus spreading to other countries. This comes after an Ebola outbreak that started in 2013 killed more than 11,000 people in the West African countries of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Our next guest found that while the outbreak led to assistance from health agencies around the world, it also exposed some major flaws in how the world prepares for and responds to deadly diseases. Reed Wilson is a national correspondent at The Hill and the author of the book Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak. Reed, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Well, you write at the outset of the book, there were a lot of heroes and great stories of people doing things both in the affected area, from around Africa, and from around the world. But if I'm reading your book right, your main message is this is a wake-up call. A lot of things didn't go the way they should have in the response.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at this. Ebola is an incredibly deadly disease. It kills more than half of the people who get it, depending on what strain we're talking about. But it's not that difficult to, it's not that easy to get, to transmit between person to person. You actually have to touch, you know, blood or guts or something like that to get it from one person to another. What happens when the next virus comes along, one that's much more easily transmissible by air, if somebody coughs or sneezes or something like that? That's when the world is really going to face a true pandemic. And that's what public health officials are really worried about. We saw with the Ebola outbreak that the global public health system is not yet ready to handle and crack down on some of the big epidemics that could spread around the world.
So in the face of this spread of Ebola, what went wrong maybe in the earliest days of the spread of the illness that kept it from being contained until this was kind of a worst case in some way, until it went into a few really big cities in Western Africa?
Right. So one of the first things that went wrong is people didn't really know what they were looking at. Ebola is endemic to the Congo River Basin. Right now there's an outbreak, as you mentioned, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's popped up in the Republic of the Congo, in Uganda, in places like that in Central Africa. These West African nations had never seen anything like it. And it's as if, the difference between Central Africa and Western Africa is the difference between Seattle and Miami. I mean, they're a continent apart, and the communication is not the same as it is here in the United States. So people didn't know what they were looking at to begin with, which helped the spread. The second was the three countries that were affected are the poorest in the world. The GDP of Liberia is about 1% of what the GDP is here in the United States, the per capita, that is. So, you know, instead of living on an average of about $50,000 a year, imagine if you were living on $500 a year. That poverty helps the disease spread as well, both throughout the rural regions and in the very slum-heavy major cities. And this was also the first time that Ebola came to a place where air travel is possible to major cities around the world. You know, there are direct flights from the capitals of all three countries to Europe and to the Middle East and to the largest cities in Africa. We live in a globalized world now, a place where any bug is just an airline connection or two away from New York or Beijing or any other major city in the world.
The World Health Organization is an organization that people would turn to in hopes that they could thwart a disease like this once it becomes known. They get a lot of criticism for kind of a slow bureaucracy, a slow response. Can you talk about what they did in the Ebola epidemic?
So to begin with, the World Health Organization mobilized a few teams to go look at what this virus was that was raging in the rural hills of Guinea. And they thought they were looking at maybe a cholera outbreak they didn't expect Ebola because nobody had ever seen Ebola in this particular area. The World Health Organization eventually raced a number of authorities into Guinea, Liberia, and eventually Sierra Leone, but only after months and months in which the virus ended up growing. One big stigma in all this is that the World Health Organization started out by telling everybody in West Africa that if you got Ebola, you would die. Ebola will kill you. Well, that's not the message they really wanted to send. What they wanted to say was, if you get Ebola, you have to get treatment, and then maybe you have the opportunity to survive. The initial messaging of if you get Ebola, you're going to die, meant that anybody who came down with the disease was more likely to hide from the World Health Authority than cooperate with them and go to an Ebola treatment unit, because who wants to die in a sterilized space, you know, far away from your family? But as it, the way Ebola works is that as somebody gets sicker and sicker, they are more infectious to other people around them. So as your family is caring for you, if you've got sick, they are then more likely to get infected as the days go on. And if when burial practices have to take place, this is a culture where burial, it means a lot, where the traditions of dressing and preparing your loved ones for the afterlife is hugely important. And therefore, about 70% of the cases were transmitted during the burial and funeral process. So the World Health Organization started out by warning people about how deadly this virus was, instead of telling them how important it was to get treatment. Once they figured out that mistake, they both told people to get treatment and they taught people how to safely bury their dead, which was a hugely important aspect of this. One of the things that I found most interesting in the course of researching this was that the hard sciences helped come up with a cure, with a vaccine for the Ebola virus, but it was really the soft sciences, things like anthropology and actually understanding the culture with which you're interacting, that probably saved even more lives.
Talking to Reed Wilson, author of Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak. That reminds me of a common theme from your book. For authorities, they want to take decisive action. They want to be seen as taking decisive action. They don't want to do things that cause people to panic or behave in ways that are going to make things worse. And this is true in West Africa, in the United States, when there was a case spotted in Texas. Can you talk about how to thread that needle?
Yeah, and this, I think, comes a lot from who the president was at the time. I remember back before the last 2 years in which all of our hair has been on fire nonstop, we had, President Obama was, his nickname was No Drama Obama. And he wanted to sort of convey the sense that the U.S. government had this, if Ebola came to the United States, it would be under control quickly. Well, that wasn't what people wanted to hear. They wanted to hear some urgency and some decisive action that would protect the country from what a lot of people thought was this threat. But let's not forget, in the summer of 2014, when Ebola was really blowing up in West Africa, there was also this group of madmen running across Iraq and Syria called the Islamic State that were taking over everything in sight. That was a pretty scary time in the United States. Go back and read the news clips, and everybody was pretty on edge. So the fact is, there's a dual side here to this coin of trying to make sure that people are calm and nobody's panicking, but at the same time showing the urgency and the action that a government needs to take to actually do something and contain a virus or a group of terrorists in the Middle East or something like that. There's a really delicate balance here that the Obama administration tried to strike. They got it wrong in the beginning, but I think in the end they did it right in that they sent the world's best organizational force, if you will, the U.S. Army, over to West Africa. 3,000 Americans went over to build Ebola treatment units. And, of those 3,000, not a single one got sick.
I want to talk about early warning systems as we look at the future. You write in your epilogue, there are a lot of blind spots in the world where the public health authorities wouldn't detect a disease until it had started to spread. What could we do about that?
Yeah, so the Ebola supplemental bill, that's the bill that Congress passed to pay for the response to the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, it contained a provision that helped the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention pay for what were effectively mini Centers for Disease Control and Preventions in about 49 countries around the world. And I'm talking about countries like Congo and like the three West African countries that we're talking about, Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, and South Asian nations where a bird flu might emerge or something like that, South American nations where they're dealing with an outbreak of yellow fever in Brazil. And that's important because the global public health chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And there are a lot of really weak links out there. The United States, it has the best public health system in the world. We don't really experience outbreaks. The health as it exists in the United States isn't really the same concept as it is in sub-Saharan Africa or Southeast Asia, where, you know, death is unexplained, and death happens a lot more often than it does here at an earlier age and under circumstances that always aren't always understood. So the fact is, we need these early warning systems around the world. We need somebody watching, whether it's a bird market in China, whether it's a you know, the slums of West Africa or of Rio de Janeiro. You know, something is going to come next. We don't know what it is. The World Health Organization has actually designated the unknown as a research priority. They call it Disease X, which is a nice and scary title that I think I might steal for my next book. But there is something else coming. We don't know what it is, but fewer and fewer people will die if we make sure that we're watching for it before it becomes a full-blooded pandemic.
In our last minute and a half or so, looking back at the reaction to Ebola then, do you feel like the world is more prepared now for disease X, whatever it might be?
Yeah, the world is, in fact, more prepared, and that's because of really great organizations like the American Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The World Health Organization did a remarkable amount of self-examination to trying to figure out what they did wrong, and now they have a new directorate that is effectively for things like epidemic response, that is shipping dozens of people, hundreds of people into the Democratic Republic of the Congo right now. So we're getting better, but the fact is we're not there yet, and what comes next is not going to be Ebola. It's probably going to be a flu. It might be something that's, you know, easily transmissible by a cough or a sneeze. The fact is we have to be ready, not just in Central Africa, not just in West Africa, but in every part of the globe, because international borders don't get a lot of respect from a virus that can't see them.
Reed, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
That's Reed Wilson, national correspondent at The Hill. We've been talking about his book, Epidemic, Ebola, and the Global Scramble to Prevent the Next Killer Outbreak.